The case that they have over here, however, is the one that the Rav Shimi Barchia is referring to, in a question that he asked Rav. He says, if you purchase slaves from an idolater, right, and you circumcise the slave, the lo tovlo, but the slave did not immerse himself in the mikveh. So what is he now? Is he still a goy, or is he still, or is he halfway on the way to becoming a Jew? You understand? That's the problem, because in order to the rule is that mol the loytoval, he's still not converted. You have to have both of these actions. Of course, in the case of a woman, a shifcha, in that case she has to undergo the tefillah, you see, for the in order to become Jewish. Okay. So, at any rate, so here's the case then where he was circumcised, but he did not immerse himself in the mikveh. V'chein b'dei hashpoches shebolo v'loi tov. Okay? And likewise, he says, in the case of, all right, shifcha, remember, is the woman's slave, okay? I mean, today we say a maidservant, but in all honesty, in those days where they had slavery, she was a slave, you understand? We're not talking about the dins and the hoys, the woman who helps out the housekeeper or something like that. But we're talking about actually in those days when slavery was still in existence, okay? All right. Now, we have a law in the Torah, if you remember, that if a guy, a Jew, right, sells himself or is sold by the Bezdin into slavery, actually, that should be the first case. He's sold by the Bezdin into slavery because he stole and had nothing, and then squandered everything that he stole and could not repay the owner. Because remember, the rule is that you have to repay the owner. And there's a double penalty for stealing. Okay. So the Bezdin has the right to sell him into slavery. All right. Then, the master to whom it is sold, he has the right to give him a shifcha, a woman slave. Okay. A Kanadis. I'm not talking about Jewish woman. A shifcha Kanadis. Okay. And she bears children to the Jewish slave, okay? So, it's written over there, Ha'isha v'ilodeho t'yeladoneho, right? The woman and her children, they still remain slaves to the master. But, he goes out free at the end of the 6 years that he served, okay? So, these are children who are born then to a woman slave, right? She's not Jewish yet, right? That's correct. And again, what happened in the case of the of this child born? The answer is that this child was circumcised, but not dipped into the mikveh, right? Okay, all right. Didn't immerse himself in the mikveh. So, at any rate, whether it's the first category or the second category, Rukon, Midrason, Meshuk, Tone. If they happen to spit in the street, or if they tread, wherever they tread in the street, these places become tummy, and therefore if somebody comes in contact with it, then they in turn can become tummy. Very strict rule about tuma. And in reality, it goes counter to another ruling that we had, that the public way, wherever you are, the street, we do not have tuma versus a rabbit. Okay. So, there are contradictions. I mean, we understand. There are contradictions. Okay. This is why Rashi takes this, and the host of commentaries, you know, they have to deal with these problems. The fact
and
that
contradictions a result of different times and places.
Yeah, but also as a result of who are the authorities who said them.
But
right,
do these
right.
authorities live at different times and
yes,
places?
Yes, obviously. Right.
So
some of them live at the same time, and others live at a later generation. That's correct. Yes. In that particular case, correct, and it becomes an Eved Olam, which means until the time that the Jubilee comes, he remains a slave. Yeah.
Doesn't he put his ear to the
yeah, and then the ear has to be pierced by the mezuzah, the doorposts of the Beis Din and so on, right.
Was that hand that a Jewish kid, a boy, should not have his ear pierced, like they do today in some of the kids? If that piercing represented something in the Torah, then I should think that that would be
triggering yourself that you shouldn't.
Right, right. You're supposed to take care of your body so that you don't disfigure yourself. A tattoo, for example, is prohibited.
Okay,
right.
It just occurred to me the ear thing is a specific, and the kids do it in one ear.
Yeah.
With girls wear ears.
With girls, right. With girls, this is a common thing. The question is, if a boy does it, is he doing something where he's imitating, it's as if he's wearing feminine dress, which is prohibited. Because if you remember, there's also a prohibition that, women should not wear men's clothing and men should not wear women's clothing. So that may be in that category would be prohibited, you see.
This is
amazing.
Does Shacharit belong to women too?
Shatnez, therefore, you should make sure that the garment that you're wearing is not a mixture of linen and wool.
Linen
and wool, right. Has nothing to do with polyester or anything like that. Yeah. But linen and wool is a prohibited mixture.
That happens. Silk and wool,
But silk is not.
Right.
That's correct.
That's
right.
Is that a mixture?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, if there are
It's a jacket, it's a wool jacket, but it has linen over here underneath or something like that. I mean, that's something that should be avoided. Right. Yeah. But today we have so many synthetic fabrics that it isn't exactly the same problem that it used to be.
But don't the men mostly like wool suits?
Yes, of course.
100% wool.
Yes, right. So you have to see, what else goes into the garment and so on. Yeah. There are laboratories, Shatnez laboratories, in New York. And in some areas outside of New York, possibly Boston has one, Baltimore definitely would have one, and so on.
Which does what?
They'll test the garment to see whether there's any linen within a woolen garment. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
What that implies.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. that
all right.
To us, all of us.
Right.
I never heard that.
Yeah. All right. So, the Amri law, however, there are those who say, Tahor. That, you know, it's not Tomei, but it's Tahor. In other words, we're not concerned about the fact that they spit or that they tread in the marketplace, you know, in other words, in the public wayfare, okay? Yeinon, as far as the wine is concerned, so, Gedolim, Oisim Yain Nesach. If these slaves that we're talking about who were circumcised but not immersed in the mikveh. So if they are adults, then in that particular case they would still make it Yai Nesach. Okay? Ketanim, however, if they're young children, Einoisim Yai Nesach, right? They do not make it Yai Nesach. Of course, I don't have to tell you that this is immediately a contradiction to whom? To Rav, right, who said that the child is 1 day old, the Goy's child is already making Yai Nesach. So obviously, there's a contradiction to it, right? And in the meantime, they also want to define what do we mean by adults and children. So he says, Ve'elehin gedolim, ve'elehin ketanim. These are what we mean by adults, and these are what we mean by children. Gedolim, adults, he says, yodim b'tiv aviris kechavim shabshehom. They are familiar, remember that they were going to begin with, so they are familiar, you know, with idolatry and with all that accompanies idolatry. You know, different ways of worship, etc., you know.
Well, it doesn't give years, it just gives...
Right, that they...
Knowledge.
Exactly, right. Ketanim, however, children, einam yodim etiv aviris kechav b'shoshav. They don't know what idolatry is all about and whatever goes together with it. Ketanim mihas, however, from this we see that what? That Gedolim in, yes, Gedolim do create Yai Nesach, and Ketanim, no, whereas children do not, right? So, Tio Gemor, so he says, I'll tell you, this applies to Abinei Shefochis, that this applies to the children of the Canaanite, maidservants. Or, so they say, how can you say that? The chen korban, doesn't it say, and likewise, which means that the two of them are the same category? So he says, arukon midrason. So that refers to the spitting and the treading. So he says, hodnicho lamando omatome. Okay, so that's an agreement with the authority who says that they make a tome. Elo lamando matohor. However, if you follow the authority who says that it's perfectly permissible that they did not make tummy, so my equal and Neymar, so what are you going to say? So he says, Hokamash Balon. So from this we learn, Avodim Dumyo Divide Shefochis, that Avodim slaves, in other words, Canaanite slaves who have been circumcised, but, you know, they did not dip in the mikveh. They are in the same rank, if we want to say. They're similar to the Bnei Shefochis, to the children of Canaanite maidservants, who also, I mean, molo v'loi tofta, that they were circumcised, but they did not go into the mikveh. Ma b'nei shvoches molo v'lei tovlu hu da'isin yei nesach, right? Just as the children of shvochos, the maidservants who were circumcised and did not immerse themselves in the mikveh, they are the ones who create nei nesach. So, lo the tov lo lo, but if they were circumcised and they immersed, they would not make Yad Nesach. So afavodim kain. So likewise, this would be true of the slaves, that if they were, in other words, bolo, if they were circumcised and they were able to immerse themselves, so also they would not then make it Yad Nesach, because they are, you know, more Jewish at this particular point, since they've complied with the you know, the two essential mitzvahs that make them Jewish, or whatever you want to say. Okay. La'afuke, this is to exclude the opinion of the Rav Nachman, or Shmuel, right, who quoted Shmuel, to Omar Rav Nachman, or Shmuel, because Rav Nachman said, quoting Shmuel, Halokeach avodim, you know, if they can call him, that if you buy slaves from the idolaters, afal pi shemolu v'tovlu, even though they have been circumcised and they've immersed themselves in the mikveh, oisin yaynesach, they still, you know, they still cause wine to become yaynesach, ad shetishka avedas kechavim mipihem, until the point where the, you know, whatever connection that they had, thoughts and so forth, the power of Eda Zora, finally is no longer literally on their mouths. In other words, they're no longer thinking about those things again. All right, I think I'm going to stop at this point, and we'll continue this discussion next week. Okay, tonight is the 7th of February of the year 2007. We continue now at the bottom of Eda Zora, Nun Zion, Omid Aleph, four lines from the bottom. And last week we began discussing about the business about slaves, so I just want to take a few minutes, I mean again, to go touch on some of the highlights. Obviously there are many, many laws that pertain, but as much as we had various questions about slavery, you know, in the olden days, so I thought I would say a few words about it. Okay. In the Bible, of course, there is a recognition of slavery, okay? There is, however, a distinction made, first of all, between what we call an Eved Ivri, which means he is a Jew who has either sold himself into slavery because he couldn't pay his debts, or he stole, and the Beis Din sentenced him to be a slave until he could pay off what he had stolen. If it's paid off, that's it, you know. Just as at any time an Eved Ivri, you know, could redeem himself by simply making financial arrangements with the person who had purchased him for the amount of labor that he had performed and that was still owing according to the contract, so to speak, okay? And in the case of the Eved Ivri, so we have over there the fact that the Torah tells us that we have to treat him very, very kindly. We have to remember that we were slaves once upon a time in the land of Egypt, and God made us free. And therefore, you know, we should seek to be free people and not, you know, not to sell ourselves into slavery. Okay? Or be forced by a region, you know, the fact that we have stolen, and the best in sentences is to pay what we have stolen, and if we don't have it, you know, we squandered it, whatever it may be, in that case, you know, you have to work it out. Okay. An Eved Ivri is a Jew. During the time that he is an Eved, he has to have certain inconveniences in that he cannot be counted to a minion when it comes to adopting. Not the worst thing in the world, because on the other hand, the owner has to support him, his wife, his children, and treat him according to the rank that he had beforehand. If he was accustomed to living a life of luxury, the master is told that he has to provide him with the same standard of living that he had beforehand. So as a result, the Gemara says, you know, that a person who Nishikona Ebedev Yikona Ode Leatzmo, which means if you have purchased a Hebrew slave, that is, I mean, you actually have created a boss, you've acquired a boss for you. In other words, he's got to boss you see. So this is the Eved Ivri. All right. The Eved Kenani, yeah, and of course, one of the essential things is that with the Eved Ivri, as a normal rule, he goes free after 6 years of slavery if he hasn't paid the debt as yet. Well, he goes free at that particular point, okay? The Eved Kenani is a non-Jew, has been bought as a slave, right? So he becomes the property of his owner, and in turn the owner has the right to pass it on to his heirs. Yeah, like property, same thing, okay? But again, there are certain things that have to take place with the Eved Kenani. As we see, if he's an Eved Kenani, then he has to be circumcised, and he has to also immerse himself in the mikveh, and at that particular point, he becomes a Jew. He's not yet a full-fledged Jew, to the extent, again, I mean, that it's a question about marriage or something like that, you know. But as far as, you know, what he is now, so as we see from the Gemara, as far as does he make it Yeneseh or not, well, there's a difference of opinion over here. But the Chachamim are, you know, they feel that once he has already been circumcised and he has immersed himself in the mikveh, then in that case he's no longer a goy, and therefore he does not render it Yayin Nesach, okay?
Would
yes.
You assume that because he's living in a home with a Jew,
right,
he would be observing mitzvot as well?
Yes, he has. He's required to observe mitzvot, absolutely right. The general rule is, in that respect, that an Eved observes all the rules of the Torah, except those that are dependent upon time performance. Because those that are dependent upon time performance, in that particular case, the time that he has is not his own. The time belongs to whom? Belongs to the master. So that under those circumstances, that he cannot observe because he's busy, you know, working for the master. But apart from that, then he's required to observe all the other rules, whether it's kashrus or Shabbos. I mean, the Ten Commandments itself specifically says what about it? That you have to keep, you know, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, right? You shall not do any labor on it, right? Neither do you, nor right, etc., etc. Your maidservant, your manservant, your maidservant, and so on. And they mean specifically, you know, the slaves are working for you. They also have to keep Shabbos.
How would
the
Jew acquire this
slave?
Buy him?
He buys him in the slave market. That's the answer. Right. Exactly what happens. Because, you know, he can be...
So, like
now,
labor.
Exactly. Now, of course, again, it's possible for a couple of things to happen, too. First of all, the Torah has a rule that says that if you knock out a tooth, an eye, in other words, if you do the damage, as we say, Rosh Yavorim, to the whatever, you know, the principal parts of the body, if you do that to him, then in that case he goes free automatically. So that's one thing. I mean, what a contrast to the ancient world where masters could whip them and they could kill them if they feel like it and not be held responsible. But that's not true of, you know, the Jewish treatment at the the Torah itself tells us for the Eved Kanani. So that's already a big difference, as you can see. And secondly, it's always possible for someone to purchase him and to emancipate him, or the owner himself could emancipate the his slave.
So if such a slave went free,
yeah.
Say the owner emancipated him.
Right. Then in that case, he's a Jew, right?
I was just going to say,
right.
In the community.
Yeah. So he's a Jew to that particular point, right?
He becomes a Jew.
Yes.
Can he marry a Jew? Will a rabbi?
He can marry. The question is, I mean, it's also a question of status. Who can you marry into? Okay.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Who would marry him?
Right, right. But definitely he can marry, have children, etc., etc. There's no question about that. And as I say, he's a Jew. I mean, once is Tovlu v'Molo, as we say over here. So, you know, the same thing that applies, of course, for a female slave, a Shifcha. That, you know, she would go free, or she has the same obligations, etc., etc. Okay? And, but because she's not, by origin, you know, a Jewish woman, but only, you know, she became converted when they took her into the Jewish household, so therefore her children would still be slaves unless the master decides, you know, that he wants to emancipate her. So once he emancipates her, and in that particular case, her children would be regular Jews.
Suppose
right.
Yeah. She's gone through that,
right.
And she marries the Eved Kanani.
Eved Kanani?
Kanani, that's there.
Yeah, alright, so they have the same status.
And
right.
How about their children?
Yeah, their children, right, so the children would be Jewish.
They would be Jewish?
They would be Jewish because they're both Jewish.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So it's an official status. Thing.
Right,
but I don't know when they went to slave and the
that's already a different story. That's a different law in the Torah.
That was the Ivri. That was the Eved Ivri, wasn't it?
Yes. In other words, the Eved Ivri was permitted, you know, to have the master. Of course, we're talking about, you know, a man who has no other obligations. He's not married or something like that. And in that case, the master could give him a woman to live with him and to have children. Those children are slaves. Whereas he goes free, you know, that's it. However, if he's married, then in that particular case, the wife does not become a slave because, but as I mentioned before, you know, the owner has to support not only the slave, but his wife, his children, etc., etc.
But paradox there. The Ivri can have the slave for wife, but he has to leave her behind when he leaves.
Right.
However, we're just learning that the slave has to be made Jewish, has to be converted.
Right.
So if the slave that he got has already been converted, he still has to leave her when he goes free?
Yeah. Yeah.
She's still a slave, even though she's Jewish.
Right, right.
And she's still the property of the...
Yeah. Well, that's...
But he can't become emancipated after 7 years.
In any case, he goes free.
The question is, she stays
as a slave, unless, right,
that,
right,
the,
yeah.
Because if she becomes an Ivriyah, if she becomes an Eved Ivriyah, I would think that the same 6 years would apply to her. Or if she was a young girl, then it would also be signs, too. But once she becomes a Yehudit, then the law that would apply to her would then be that of an Ivriyah.
Well, the fact of the matter is that if a woman, you know, sells her services, so to speak, as a shivcha ivriyah, that in that particular case, naturally she also would go free after 6 years.
And so,
right.
No. But if you're, but wait, under your example.
Well, I just heard
right,
that it doesn't
right.
work that way. But
it doesn't work that way for the
Jewish, she's brought into the house and is converted. Then her legal status, in my reason, would change.
Yeah.
Would then become, she would never, would not continue to be.
Well, this is a very technical area. I have to tell you, very technical, right? Yeah. And you know, there are various rules, but I mean, for example, Sefer Devarim, where they repeat again some of the laws of slavery. So in that particular case, you know, it says just as you have to give the Jewish slave at the end of his 6 years, you have to give him a very, very handsome settlement. So the same thing applies to the Ivriyah, to the woman.
Who has become Jewish.
Right.
Okay, well that's different than what you just told me.
So, you know, it's not everything that's so clear cut. This is really a more complicated area, right? Right. That's when they pierce his ear, right? Because he should have chosen freedom and he refused to do it, right? There is one more thing I just wanted to mention, because we'll be coming to it next week with the Torah reading when we come to Mishpatim, and that is about the Omo Ivriya. The Omo Ivriya is a different law. There is a minor child, a female child, right, who the father decides that he wants to sell her because he can't afford to support her, and he hopes that maybe the boss or the boss's daughter will marry her one day. Okay. But with her, she becomes free the minute that she reaches puberty. Either she has to be married or she has to be freed. One or the other. So that's not the same as the Shivcha Kenanis, because she is Jewish to begin with. I mean, she's an Omo Ivriya, you see.
Right.
Yeah, so we have to know, you know, a little bit more, right,
and then
the tactical.
The category
right.
Those who refuse to be converted.
Right. This is what we have over here, where it mentions, you know, that Balu, they were circumcised, below Tavla, but they did not go. So in that particular case, they are still considered not Jewish because they haven't gone through it, right? Right. Well, no, not necessarily.
No.
But Toshav could be a free person, you know, who comes and he dwells in the midst of the Jews. That's all.
But it could also be a slave who then decides to, in fact, follow the Noahide laws, but also may not eat kosher meat or something like that.
Okay, that's correct. I mean, then there are goyim who follow the seven basic laws, right? The mitzvahs b'nei noyach, right? And look, we don't forcibly convert them or anything like that. Yeah. But you know, they have to be treated with respect and so on. Gear or the toshav, right? So. The Ger is somebody who normally he has converted, the Tosha is somebody who has not converted. Of course, today, when we use these terms, we don't really use them in the same sense anymore. Because the word Ger now simply means a stranger, so to speak. Okay, the Tosha means anybody who dwells in a certain place, right? Right. In other words, Toshve Tel Aviv would be people who live in Tel Aviv or something like that.
More difficult, they have the legal status in Israel of those who are resident aliens.
Right. Yeah. So.
Citizens that have residency.
Right, exactly. It's like having a green card, so to speak, in America. Something like it. Okay. All right. So, now. There are two little words that we have to start with, okay? And that's the second word on the line, fourth line, the abbreviation, Kumash Malan Dalo, which means we come to the conclusion then that this is not the case. What is not the case? What is not the case is that according to Rav Nachman, who quoted Shmuel, right, he was very strict in that he said that an Eved, who was circumcised but had not immersed himself in the mikveh, that
hold it.
He says that even though he has was circumcised and had been he immersed himself in the mikveh, but he still creates Yain Nesach even after that formal conversion, until the point where he no longer thinks along the idolatrous terms, right? Ashatishka of it is own appeal, right? But that's not what the Chachamim says. So that's why it says Kamash Baman the law. Therefore, it teaches us that this is not the case according to the Chachamim. According to the Chachamim, once he is what? Molo v'tovlo, then in that particular case, he no longer creates Yain Nesach.
Right.
Okay.
So he's the most
right. Right. So, Gufa. So the Gemara wants to again analyze this last idea. Omar Rab Nachman Omar Shmuel, right? Same bit of Rab Nachman Omar Shmuel, who said, if you buy slaves from the Goyim, right? Even though they have been circumcised, they immerse themselves in the mikveh, nevertheless, they still would create Yain Nesach, Ad Shatishka Avedis Kechav Mipihem, right? Until the Avedis Zorah finally ceases from their mouth. They no longer think in terms of Avedis Zorah. So the Gemara wants to know, Vekama, so how long would that take according to Rab Nachman, right? So Amar Rav Yehoshua ben Levi, so Rav Yehoshua ben Levi said, Ad Shneim Oso Chodesh. It means you have to wait a year. During that year, they would still create Yain Nesach, but after the year, then by then we know that the Avedah Zorah is no longer in their thoughts, in their mind, on their lips, so to speak, and therefore at that point, then they would not create Yain Nesach. So Eispei Rabba Rav Nachman. So Rabba asked the following question of Nachman, all right? Challenges him a little bit. He says, right? You buy slaves from the Goyim, right? Who was circumcised and they did not immerse themselves in the mikveh. Likewise, the children of the female slave, who was circumcised but did not immerse themselves in the mikveh. So, we say that Rukon Amid Roson Bashuk, that's the next page over there, that Ruk is spit. If they spit or Midra, so they tread Bashuk in the literally marketplace, right? In other words, in the public area, right? Tony, it is impure. Okay. The Amri law, but there are those who say Tor, right? That it's not so. That does not create impurity. I mentioned last week, that we find in other places in the Gemara, not necessarily the Veda itself, but in other Gemaras, where they talk about Tumah Vitara, that the general rule is that there is no Tumah Birshus Haram. In other words, there is no tumor in any public area because the fact that people are always going back and forth and so on and so forth, and if there should be something that was Tommy, automatically, you know, it would have been pushed aside, kicked aside, buried, or something or other, okay? So that's a general rule, whereas you can have two more Rishus HaYochid. So Rishus HaRabim doesn't, well, naturally the Shuk is Rishus HaRabim, right? So even though one opinion says that if they spit, then automatically that spit will convey tuma, or if they even step in the street, it also, their tread creates tuma, but this is not, you know, the general opinion that says it is tahor. It's not so. So, now the same statement that goes from the spit and the treading to the next question, yenon, namely the wine of Avodah Zarah, right? What about them? So, of course, we're not talking about, you know, we're talking again about who? Molo velo tovlov, right? Molo velo tovlov. They were circumcised and they did not immerse themselves in the mikvah. They were not immersed. Okay. And I'll use that expression now simply in order to save extra words. Okay. All right. So, at any rate, in what case would that be? So he says, G'daylim oisin yeinesach. He says, if they are adults, you know, these slaves that we're talking about, then, in that particular case, they, their touch, etc., creates yeinesach. Ketanim, but if they are, you know, young, child, not adults yet, right, ein oisin yeinesach, right? And so now again we want to find what is the definition of gedolim and ketanim. So it says Elohein gedolim the Elohein ketanim. These following are gedolim and the following are ketanim. Gedolim, who are adults, sheyodim betir avedis koyachovim misham sheho, right? These are adults who are used to being, you know, to Avodah Zarah. They know what it's all about, and you know, they were brought up that way. Okay, ketanim, but the young ones, the children, she'ein yodim mitiv aferes koyechovim mishal sheho, right? So they are the ones who don't know about it. They grew up, you know, without that, they grew up already in a Jewish household and they don't know anything at all about Avodah Zarah, because in the household in which they grew up, they're practicing Yiddishkeit, they're living Yiddishkeit, okay?
They don't have to wait a year.
Right, right.
Is there a reason why this sounds familiar to me? Did we have a situation with...
Yes, on the previous side. It was already mentioned, so now they're analyzing it again. Okay? Yeah. Katani mihas, nevertheless, we learn what? Bolu v'lei tavlu in. In other words, if they were circumcised but not immersed, they do create avid yainesach. And bolu v'tavlu, right? But if they... both of them, you know, both actions took place, then loy, right? Then no. So, question now is, while they're still analyzing it, what would be the difference between the B'nai Shefachos, right? In other words, children born to slave women in the Jewish household, right? As compared to a slave that had been bought from a Canaanite, well, you know, a Goyish slave who had been bought in the general slave market.
Well, the big difference would be the association that they had with the idolatry.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's the main difference.
Right. Correct.
Soul, no
right. Okay. So this is what they tried to say. Katade says, we learned because, nevertheless, that what? Malu v'leitavlu in, right? And malu v'leitavlu loy. So, tirgimu abenei shefachis. So, who are they applying this business to? He says, we apply it to the children of the Canaanite maidservants. So now, you know, and these children grew up in a Jewish household, and therefore we can say definitely that they do not create Yeridesach, you know, by touching it, whatever they were doing, okay? So he says, wait a minute, oh, the chayin katane. But didn't it say the chayin and likewise the Canaanite slaves? So in other words, that would mean what? That should mean that's exactly the same story, correct? Yeah. But Hanicha, so he says, this is fine. Lamanda Omar Tobi. If you follow the opinion of the one who says that, you know, their spittle or their treading is Tobi. But Lamanda, but Ela Lamanda Omar Tahor. But if you follow the opinion of the one who says that it doesn't, you know, it does not create impurity, these things that we just mentioned, so by Yikul Meimar. So what are you going to say as far as does it create Yei Nesach or not Yei Nesach, right? So, oh, Kamachmalon, didn't we learn that what? That Avodim Dumya Dei Shefachos, that the slaves are similar, you know, in other words, slaves who, you know, there's a similarity between slaves and the children of the Canaanite maidservants. Ma b'nei shefoches gedolim hu de'osin yei nesach, just as in the case of the children of the maidservants, if they are adult, then they create Yai Nesach, Ketanim Einoisin Yai Nesach, but not if they are young. So, Af Avodim, so we have to say that slaves also, Name, right, also, Gedolim Einoisin Yai Nesach, if they're adults, then they could create Yai Nesach. Of course, we're talking again about, you know, those that who were Molo V'loi Tovlu, right? In Ketanim Einoisin Yai Nesach, all right? But okay, if they are young, they do not create Yai Nesach. And this is La Fuke Minderav, the Omer, and this is not in agreement with Rav, who we quoted at the top of the previous page. The Omer, who said, the Omer Rav, the Rav said, Tinok Ben Yomei Eise Yai Nesach, right? That a goyish child, even if he's only one day old, already he creates Yai Nesach. So, Kamash Malon Dolo. So, this teaches us all that that's not so. So, in other words, it's not true what Rav had to say. It doesn't follow his law. The law follows more, the law is more lenient about these. And as we said before, that the prevailing opinion of the Chachamim is that once they were, you know, Molo V'Tovlo, in other words, they had both, they were circumcised, and so in that particular case, they are no longer creating Yai Nesach. The touch no longer makes it Yai Nesach.
And no matter what their age is.
Right, right.
Doctor, I have a problem even with the leniency that's in this, because if they are B'nai Shefa and they grew up in a Jewish household,
right, then why? Exactly.
Even if they're older children, right, they would have no knowledge of Avodah Zarah, so why would they?
Yeah, that's true.
Why would they affix to them this tuma, if you will?
Yep. Well, I have to say, it's because it's an extreme view, but they're trying to make an equation between the two, because it's written the chain. So if that's the case, it's sort of working backward. If we say that Molo Vitovlu, that they are no longer making Yain Nesser, so in that particular case, well, I have to say that it certainly is true in the case of Bnei Shofachos, right? And if we say that there was Molo Vitovlu, then a similar situation among the Bnei Shofachos, I mean, maybe the child who grew up, but he was never, I mean, maybe he was circumcised, but he never was immersed in the mikveh, you understand?
And the answer for that
right.
was, that was okay or was not?
The answer is, if he was a child only, ketanim, then in that case it wouldn't be. But if he was gadol, he still had not been circumcised, and or even if he was circumcised, but he had not been immersed in the mikveh, then in that particular case, right.
So this child, right. during yeah. his childhood years,
right.
would be okay.
Yes.
But as he grew older, had not yet. Been
terrible, right.
go into the period where he would no longer be.
Correct.
Isn't that illogical? Doesn't that seem illogical
it's
to you? I mean,
illogical.
He's illogical, because he's growing
yeah.
up in that house.
Right, and he's already... Yeah. yeah. Well,
okay, let me point out a problem that we face in America. Okay? Problem is, the Jewish man marries a Goyish woman. She never converted, or maybe if she converted, it was not in accordance with the halacha, you understand, okay? In that particular case, child is born. Now, you're aware, I mean, that the status, is a child Jewish or not, depends upon, in that particular case, what is the mother. Okay? All right. Let's say that after the child was born, they decided that nevertheless they would have a bris. Okay? So they have a bris. We have a business that we say it's Altas Bezdin, in other words, that you know, a Jewish court of law authorized, you know, that the child should have a bris, whatever it is. All right, this child grows up. Is this child Jewish or not Jewish?
Can you say it's you? Because they've always brought up with Jewish customs and laws, because his mother was not formally a Jew, he's really not Jewish, and so is he really in the status of somebody that can convert or not? So when he's 18, he can make a decision to be a Christian or whatever,
yeah.
whatever it is, Hindu, or to become Jewish.
Okay, all right. You stress the fact the age of 18. In reality, according to Jewish law, he should make up his mind about the time when he begins to reach puberty. In other words, if a boy is going to be bar mitzvah, right? He has to have a formal action of conversion prior to that.
What about...
Which means that even though he was circumcised as a youngster, but what had he done? He had not been in the mikveh, you understand?
He gets no credit for having been brought up in a Jewish household.
Right, exactly.
He'd have to go to the mikveh.
He'd have to go to the mikveh, right. And we have to write, we have what we call atofas dot, that you take a drop of blood from his penis, right.
So what happens to, what's the status, where instead of a bris with the formality of the ritual,
yeah.
the Jewish child, the child of a Jewish mother,
right.
is just circumcised medically.
Yeah, but if the mother is Jewish to begin with,
yeah.
then the child is Jewish.
So the fact that the circumcision. Well, suppose that mother didn't want to circumcise.
Well, if she didn't want to circumcise the child, then the child technically is an uncircumcised Jew.
Yeah, uncircumcised.
Right. According to the law of the Torah, for example, the Korban Pesach could not be eaten by someone who is uncircumcised. Okay? So that, therefore, the Korban Pesach could not be eaten. We have another law, for example, in the Talmud that says that if a woman has a child, the child is circumcised and dies, and then she has another child, and that child also is circumcised and died, right? Then what about the third child? Not circumcised, okay? Because obviously, for whatever reason it is, there's something in the genes of the child, you know, that he's a hemophiliac, okay? So, in that particular case, then what? As I say, he's not circumcised. He's a Jew in every respect, but when it comes to Korban Pesach, then in that particular case, he's not allowed to eat it because it's written in the Torah that you have to malto so, right? You have to circumcise him. And it's called Ben Nechor Lo Yechalboy, and, you know, uncircumcised who are not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach. So, it doesn't mean that he's not a Jew. He can daven, he can do this, he can do that. But, you know, in this particular case, the rabbis want to make sure that he'll be alive. Unlike, you know, the two previous children who passed away. There are many, many situations, you know, that. So, to get back to the business that we spoke about, even though this child may have grown up in a Jewish home, but if he did not go through the complete conversion business in that particular case, he would still, according to this, create a Yai Nesach if he's an adult, right. And of course, what did Rav say in his extreme statement? And even if he's only one day old, right. He creates.
So when
does
he become an adult? Did you figure that out? Is it age 13
that
he becomes an adult?
For a boy, yes. For a girl, would have to be 12. But, you know, do it prior. You don't wait for the last minute. You know, you ask them, you know, how do you, well, you want to grow up to be Jewish? In that particular case, right. Yeah, because she reaches puberty earlier than the boy does, right.
Can the boy...
Yes. Yeah. You could, but you know, you would do it, you know, close to his 13th moment, right? 13th year, right? Yeah, we've had cases over here where a boy was, you know, he had a bar mitzvah here in Kadima, and prior to that, we had to go down to the mikvah with this child and, you know, make sure that everything was okay. Of course, it was a question about whether the mother really had been converted properly or not. Happens. Okay, continue a little bit longer, and we'll call it a night. Baruch Hashem, at least
the child, the mother was not properly converted when the child was born, but then properly converted sometime during the child.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, it's a good question, but the answer is that the same thing would still apply. Since the child was born while the mother still was not Jewish, and in that particular case, so he would have to... Right. Exactly. Right. Any children born after her conversion, naturally, are automatically Jewish, but prior to that, no. Yes. Jerry?
You know, I'm sure this kind of situation has been occurring more and more frequently because
of course, well, it's a marriage.
Diversity in the Jewish community.
Right.
I'm thinking of a woman, Jewish woman, who gets divorced.
Yeah.
Remarries another Jew.
Right.
In the process, never got a gift.
Process
what happens if she has another kid? Does that kid become a manzer?
You have to examine each case carefully. Okay.
If a woman didn't get a get,
she didn't get a get. Was she married to a Jew beforehand?
Yeah.
Did she have a regular marriage ceremony with a ksuba and everything else?
Let's say she did.
Let's say she did.
She got married, you know, but then let's say she became reformed.
Yeah.
She didn't get a get.
She got divorced.
Right.
and then she remarried another Jew.
Right. And she has a child, I understand.
She had another child.
Yeah. That child technically is considered a mamzer.
So that child can't
right.
even be converted.
Oh, a mamzer could be converted also.
Can that child be converted?
Yeah, sure. But the status of a mamzer is that they're not supposed to marry, a freeborn Jew. Right. It's a problem, you know. Who can a mamzer marry? But a mamzer is also a Jew. Yeah. However, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, you know, he tried to avoid situations like that, if possible. So that, for example, the first marriage was performed by a reformed rabbi, not in accordance with halacha. Mm-hmm. And then he said, well, in that particular case, right, it's like an annulment, so to speak. I mean, he said that there was not a valid, right? So that, therefore, the second time around, presumably it was more valid. Okay.
She wasn't, she was never married.
Right, right. Because he wanted to avoid this kind of tragic situation.
Yeah, these situations sound like a Velvet Blame novel or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But that, you know, that seems to me, an awful kind of situation for the person. I'm talking about the child.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because the child is born in, you know, let's say he doesn't know any better.
Of course he doesn't know any better. The mamzer is umschuldig, you know. He's not responsible for what his parents did, unfortunately.
Yeah, that was good.
You know, I just thought of that. The kid can go off to college,
right.
And he can become very observant.
Right,
right,
right.
He can become very observant. He falls in love with an Orthodox girl.
Right.
They go to the rabbi, and they do a little searching and digging, and they find out.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You know, his status is
a big problem. That would be a big problem.
His status can't be remedied, though.
Right. Well, they try to find a remedy, if possible. Yeah. They try to find it.
Practically speaking, do you know situations in the
world? I'm sure that there are.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you know situations in where they're making?
Yeah.
Of that kind of instance.
Yeah. I don't have that much.
Right.
So not being a congregational rabbi right now, for the past 50 years, I don't have that many problems, you know.
But,
is that the kind of situation go to
very,
the
very wise.
Pardon me?
Would that kind of situation go to the court?
It could be, of course. You would have to, you'd go to those who you feel are more competent to judge than you in this particular case. Absolutely. This is why you refer Shiloh to, you know, somebody who's considered a great authority.
In New York, anyhow, they adopted a policy, I'd say this is about 7 or 8 years ago, where when a Jewish couple gets married, they agree automatically to grant each other a get in terms of divorce. It's a way of avoiding.
Well, it's sort of a prenuptial agreement.
Right, it's sort of like a prenuptial.
Right, but that's only in the last few years.
Prenuptial, yeah. That's actually what it's
but so the last few years. Well, the it is and it isn't, depending upon who you talk to.
Interesting.
Right.
Well, they were trying to do this to avoid.
Exactly. I mean, exactly. I mean, you say
the
that.
Whole point
that
the
yeah.
Tshuva,
right.
The tshuva allows for the support and everything else.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Now,
right.
Now,
because
the opposite.
But if he's a modern Orthodox, he's trying to encourage a prenuptial, if possible.
The support is either while they're married or as an inheritance. It's not.
Right.
So I mean to say, it does all the things that you want to keep the marriage forever together and protect it.
All right, we'll do a couple of more lines and call it a night, okay? Right. Anyway, now they talk about a certain event, the Hava Bechusa, what happened in the town of Bechusa, which had a big Jewish population. Okay? Also, Eved Kechovim, a guy came along over there, that guy who also lived in the Chuzar, right? And Ayel the Chadus of the Israel, he went into a store owned by a Jew, and Amalahu, and he said to him, Istchu Chabal is Bunny, do you have any wine for sale? So Amalahu, so the storekeeper said to him, or the employees said, no, no. So, Abba Yosef Kamra Bidavla. Okay, there was wine that was there, it so happened, in, you know, like a pitcher or something like that. Okay? So, what happened? Shadai Beyadei, so the guy stuck his hand into it, Shich Shech Boy, and he stirred it around. Omalu, when he said to the storekeepers, he says, "Hi, Lav Chamru, tell me that this is not wine."
Right.
So it's not finished yet. Shakle Hech Purisko. So he, you know, he kept on, he stirred it, you know, in his anger, right? And shadlay the dodan, and he threw it into a barrel. So now the question is, what to do with the wine in the barrel, right? So shargay Rava gave permission, there's a bune liyote kochavik, gave permission that the wine could be sold to goyim. Obviously, you cannot be drunk by a Jew anymore, right? Because it was now Yain Nesach. But the question is, would it be mutar b'hadoah or osur b'hadoah, right? In other words, can you derive some benefit from it or not? So Rava gave a liberal opinion. He says, you can't drink it, but you can sell it to goyim. If the galay of Huda Barchidav Huda Bereder of Nachman, so immediately that was a machlokes about this by Rav Huna Barchidav and Rav Huna the son of Rav Nachman. In other words, they disagreed with it, and Nafke Shipur the Rava the Shara, the Nafke Shipur the Rav Huna Barchidav. The Rav Huna, the Rav Nachman, the Osre. The Shipura, Shipura is the Aramaic word for a shofar. So the point is that, you know, when they wanted to make an announcement, you know, of the Beis Din's opinion or something like that, they would blow a shofar in order to call the attention of the Olam, right? So, announcers, you know, they blew the shofar in order to announce what? That it is permissible to, of course, you know, not to drink, as we said, but Rava's opinion, you know, to sell it, right? And on the other hand, the two Rav Hunas, their public announcements were that it is prohibited, okay? All right, so we'll stop at this. So tonight is the 31st of February. It's the 28th of February. I know it's the last day of the month, but my mind is someplace up in the clouds. It's the 28th of February tonight. We go, it's already the 11th now. No, it's later. What am I talking about? Yeah. It's the 11th, the 11th already. Yeah, it's already the 11th.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
We're already working on tomorrow.
Right. So, at any rate, we are now about to begin Aveda Zorah, Nunches Amal Aleph, 58a. And continue the story of what happened, this machlokes, this difference of opinion between Rava and the two Hunas. Okay? So one of them, it so happened, as the Gemara says, Ikwa Rav Huna Bereid Rav Nachman Lebechuzah. So we have to say that obviously the public announcements that were made in two different areas. One was in Mechuzah, and the other one is the place where these two Reb Nachmans lived. And they had their bester, okay? Because otherwise it doesn't make sense to say that he happened to come now to Mechuzah, where of course Rava was the Rav, okay? So Amalei Rava, the Rav Elkim Shamei, so Rava says to Rav Elkim, who was his Shabbos, he says, Tzroik, Tzroik Gali, the Lord Nis, the Enche, the Nitrid, okay? He says, shut, shut those doors, he says, so that nobody can come in who's going to be a nudge to me, who's going to bother me, okay? Olegabe, but nevertheless, Rav Huna wouldn't stay out. He came in, okay? He came in, so Amalei, I gave them my, so he said to him, tell me, how do you paskin? Do you say that it's permitted or prohibited in the case that we are talking about, namely where, you know, the Eved Kechavim, the idolater in his anger, he poured wine and he stirred it around and so on, and then he poured it into the barrel, and now the question was about the wine in the barrel, which Rava said could be sold, not drunk, whereas obviously what would be Rav Huna's opinion? You can't even get any benefit if from the sale of it. In other words, it has to be thrown away, the whole thing. Wine, barrel, you name it, okay? This would be his opinion. Also, no matter what it may be. So, Amalei, so he said to him, in other words, this is Rava now who's answering Rav Huna, and what does he say? He said, Osir afilu b'hador. It's prohibited to derive even any kind of a benefit from it, from selling it. You can't sell it. You can't derive any benefit whatever. Obviously, what you have to do it, as I said, you got to throw it away. Throw it into the Yam HaMelech or someplace, except that the Yam HaMelech is quite far from Mechuzah. The Mechuzah is in Babylonia, and the Yam HaMelech is there as well.
Even throwing
right.
it away would create a problem for them, wouldn't it, as to where they could...
Well, the idea, remember, as we already learned, was to throw it away in such a place it would no longer be accessible to anyone.
Right.
Yeah, that's why they say Liam HaMelech, I mean.
Yeah, right.
But that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that it has to be the Yam HaMelech. When you have, for example, the search for chometz, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so the Gemara Pesachim, I mean, discusses, you know, they have to search for chometz, and then how do you go about with beer chometz? Right? So, there are different opinions. Opinion of Rav Yehuda happens to be that you have to burn the chometz, but it doesn't mean that the others necessarily agree that burning is the only solution. You know, I mean, he says, Ein bir chometz ala schreifo, he says, but you have to burn it, it's the only way you can dispose of it. But they said, no, you can, for example, break it into small crumbs and scatter it in the wind. So that, you know, it's nothing that's left over there, okay? Or you can throw it into the Yam HaMelech or something like that. So that's really, it's synonymous with the idea that you destroy it in such a fashion that no benefit can be derived anymore from it. This is the idea. So,
for instance, just
right.
dump it in the wine now.
Yeah.
You couldn't just go out the back door and dump it in the field. You know.
Well, the question is, if it would fertilize the field, then so good.
Right.
But if you throw it into the sewer,
yeah.
so
yeah.
that would be one way of disposing of it. Right. Okay. But even the barrel itself has now become contaminated, you see. That's the question. At least that's the way it would seem at this moment, right? All right. So, but notice, who says that it's prohibited? It's Rava, the same man who gave the permission on the previous side of the page, right? On the previous page. He gave the permission, he says that you can get Hadar from it, you can sell the wine,
so
and so on. Well, I changed his mind, obviously. So now the question immediately is shot right back at him. So, all right. So what did Rav Huda say to him? The Homar. Did you say, right, aren't you the authority, the Mar? Mar over here, that means like, you know, master, the rabbi, something like that, right? Aren't you the master? The Omar who said, Sheikh Sheikh Ein Eisayin Esech, that stirring the wine does not make it into Yein Esech. So Amor, so what was Wallace's answer? He says, the Amra Anna, you know, what I really said was Levar Midome Dahu Chamra. What I mean is that, you know, you cannot use anything or derive anything except of the wine that was previously in the barrel. The May Arucha, right? What he's saying is, you see, he's challenged. Okay, you got the picture. Right. He's challenged. Didn't you say that it's permissible to sell the wine, right? That's what he says over here before this, right? Let's just show it to this Buddha. He gave permission to sell it, okay? So it means, obviously, that you get hanor from it, right? That you can derive benefit from it. And now, being challenged by Rav Huda, he says, no, that's not what I said. What I said was that, you know, you cannot derive any benefit whatever from it, except from what? Except that there was a little wine before, maybe in the barrel, before the guy stuck his hand in it. Something like that. It's, to me, I'll be honest with you, it's a little difficult, I mean, to... But he's trying to get out of a difficult situation.
But he actually had thrown it into a barrel with a lot more.
Right, right, of course.
So and how could you find out which of the wine he had his hand
in? Of course you can't. That's just the point. That's just the point.
Yeah.
True. But he's trying to find, you know, some way out of the fact that he now changed his mind and made a public declaration, or he made a declaration to Rav Huda, at any rate, that, you know, Rav Huda is right, I'm wrong, right? But he doesn't want to say, I'm wrong. So he qualifies it. He says, well, what I meant to say was... Okay, that is.
So,
you don't get my reference.
you know, in a way you can understand differentiation
right.
Making.
Right.
If he had a little wine that the idolater had put his finger in.
Right. And he also stirred it.
And stirred it.
This is what it's going to be a factor, right?
He could sell.
Right. Right.
But if he poured it into the barrel already, the pot where he poured it in the barrel, that he can't...
No, we would say, punkt verkehrt, just the opposite, that if he had not poured it into the barrel, the wine in the barrel would still be all right.
The wine in the barrel would be okay.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
But because he poured it in, and as you pointed out, we don't know which drop of wine is which, and of course... There's another problem that's involved. I mean, we know that sometimes when you have what we call tarovis, in other words, a mixture of what is prohibited and permissible, you know, and we go on the basis very often, not in every case, but, you know, sometimes we go on the basis that if, you know, the majority of what they are, you know, the rov, as we would say, the majority is kosher, so then the little bit, right, it simply becomes a bottle, as we say, in other words, becomes nullified, okay? But with Avodah Zarah, what did we have? We had something before that they felt that in the case of Avodah Zarah, they had to be more machmir, and that's the reason why there's Rav Hunas, and you know, and they're trying to get Rava to agree, you know, to the same idea that you have to be more machpir when it comes to Aveda Zara. Right. Yes.
In this case, this is hard to assess the quantities, but if the wine in the original picture was less than 1/60th,
Well, with Aveda Zara, exactly that's what we had in another discussion a few weeks ago, where they indicated that in the case of Aveda Zara, they felt that that had been more machmir. Because Aveda Zara is, after all, it's one of the cardinal sins. You know, there are three cardinal sins. One of them is Shvichas Damim, murder. Another one is Gilui Arayos, which means, you know, that you have incestual relationships, right? And the third one is Aveda Zara, you see. So these are considered the three cardinal sins. Well, this is a serious sin, no question, but cardinal, this is it, you know.
So the yeah. rabbis expect what we've been reading
right.
is that they are building very high fences.
Right. No question
very
about
high
it.
Fences
right,
about,
right.
About the original,
right.
the original laws.
This is correct.
To, because of the Avodah
Zarah. Right, right, exactly. And of course, another problem that's going to enter in the discussion of what we're doing right now, it goes back to something that we had quite a few weeks ago. That is, you know, that first of all, it's hard to find an idolater today. There are, but it's hard to find them, okay? Secondly, so the question is, what about, you know, wines? I don't care, let's say Gallo wine or anything like that, so on and so forth, okay? How Gallo wine is, I don't know, I have no idea. Just that's, it was advertised, okay? Today they advertise other things. But is a Jew permitted to drink what we call Stam Yena? In other words, this wine is not used for Aveda Zara, but still it is not a kosher wine. It has not been produced, you know, by Jews from beginning to end. That's the question, okay? So we learned in the Gemara that there is a prohibition against Stam Yenon, just as there is a prohibition against Yenes. There's no question about it. But here, this could be a case of Yenes, not Stam Yenon, you know. It could be that the guy is doing something which consists of a form of idol worship. It seems to be, you know, that they feel that the, shishuk, in other words, the mixing around, this was done as a part of idolatry, and so therefore, this wine definitely is now the wine of an idolater, you see. This is the problem, okay. But, you know, it makes the problem even more severe, right? You know. So how could Rava, in other words, then, give such a lenient ruling, you know, as he's being challenged for? Okay. So this is why we repeat this line, Omar, who, right? Aren't you the authority? Although he says it in third person, but he means you, right? Aren't you the authority who said that stirring it does not make it into Yenesek? So he answered, Amar, he says, Amre, what I want to tell you is that what I said, Amre, I know that Levar Midomeho, or Midome, Daru Chabra, that I mean, except for the value, the monetary value of that wine. The Me'ahu Chamra, the Amri, after all, are we talking about the value of the wine that was there before? In other words, I never meant that would be prohibited from being what? From being sold, so they get some Hador. But once he put in the... So I guess maybe what he's trying to say, and it's only a guess on my part, that there was wine in there before him. If the storekeeper had taken out some wine, would we say that by virtue of the fact that this guy put in wine that he had stored, does it serve retroactively or not on the wine that was there before? That's the question, okay? So apparently Rabbi tries to get out of it by saying that, no, I meant that you don't. It's not a retroactive action as far as the wine that was there before he poured in, and that could be sold. But, you know, you have the same problem. If it was taken out beforehand, so you could say, so why should it be prohibited? But this is very, very difficult over here.
Liquid
right. Yeah, of course. So that's why we say whatever is in the barrel now definitely is yedes. Okay. Okay. Ki asai le Pumpadiso, when I came to Pumpadiso, Pumpadiso was another famous Jewish settlement, right? Akpo nachmani shematato masniso da asir. So, first of all, we have to know who Nachmani is. Nachmani is actually Abaye. We're always talking about the differences of opinion between Abaye and Rava. Rava was the authority in Mechoza, right? And Abaye was in Pumpadiso. And Shmuel was in Ahardo, etc. I mean, you know, each one had their own bailiwick, so to speak, you know, where they were the Rav and they had their yeshivas and so on and so forth. So Abaye. They're all Babylonian cities. Babylonia, right. Right. Yeah.
It sounded like it might have been Pompeii.
None whatever. Okay. In Eretz Yisrael, there might be towns, you know, that had names that were Greek in origin or Latin in origin, something. Obviously, the town of Caesarea, right? Is obviously its name for whom? For the Caesar, all right. And Tiberia? Tiberia? What is Tiberia named for? Tiberius, right. Who was the second Roman emperor. He was the successor to Augustus and so on. Or you had other places, I mean, which had Greek names and so on. But that was an Eretz Yisrael. Babylonia, of course, the names would really reflect either Babylonia or they would reflect Persia, because don't forget that it was Persia that conquered it, and really they were part of the Persian Empire at this point. So Rava says, when I got to Pumpadiso, I came to Pumpadiso, so Abaye literally surrounded me, Akpan, you know, and Hakafa, what is Hakafa? You go around, right? But what it means is, he gave me Mishnayos, Mishnas, and Gemaras, and so on, to support which view? To support the view, of course, the Asir, that it is prohibited. Okay. Shematata, now Uvda, so first of all, what about one case he cited to me was about a certain event, right, the Havir ben Ahardoa, that took place in the Ahardoa. The Osar Shmuel, right, and Shmuel had, in other words, a similar case, and what did Shmuel, the great authority in the Ahardoa, do? He said it was Osar. Okay? No Hadar. Tiberia, similar case happened in Tiberia, in Tiberias, right? They also, Rabbi Yochanan also prohibited. So the question is, why such universal expressions of prohibition? This is what they're trying to get at this particular point. Okay? And the point is very interesting. The Omar Lee, the Amrele, right? And there are those who say that the reason why they were also, why the, you know, that they declared that it was prohibited is Lefisha Einon B'nei Torah. Because the people in these communities are not B'nei Torah. So this is why it was prohibited in Tveria, right, by Rabbi Yochanan, by Shmuel in Tveria, and so on and so forth, that the people were not that learned. And therefore, what? They were afraid that if they said that it is permitted, then people would begin to say, no, if this is okay, then this is also okay. So that therefore, they said no. So, so he says, ain't in the day Torah. And they are, okay, I come over here to your town, to Rav Huda, right? And you mean to tell me that in your town, you know, they're not the day Torah? Or maybe he's referring it rather to Rava. He said, Rava, in your town, you gave permission to do it. Maybe people in your town are no greater scholars and so on, so that, in other words, you have no business saying that it's forbidden, because they'll get the wrong impression too. They're all the same category, you know. Well, I mean, I don't have to tell you, this is always a difficult business, you know, how people interpret for themselves what the law is. I don't have to tell you that there are differences of opinion. I mean, just as Abayi Rava can disagree, just as Hillel and Shammai can disagree, so on, right? So there are other disagreements also. But the question is, what is the basis of the disagreement? And are they all being motivated by the love of Torah and the love of Yiddishkeit? This is what the question is. If it's simply you disagree because you feel that it's not